This story is the river pointing at soft materials that it potentially could bust through and flood parts of Butte.
A state disaster declaration as the Matanuska River hammers eroding banks. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, August 23rd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a protest and counter-protest in Soldotna.
I am Judith Jenkinson, the grandmother of this nasty rebel I love so much. And I'm here because I support her. She's right.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
It's summer and time to get out on the water, whether you're commercial fishing, heading to a weekend cabin, or tossing in a line to catch tonight's dinner. Having a boat means regular maintenance projects, fueling, and cleaning. Alaska Clean Harbors reminds you to minimize waste and pollution during these activities. Ask your harbor master for waste disposal information. Find more at alaskacleanharbors.org. This message sponsored by Cook Inlet Keeper with funding from the Coastal Impact Assistance Program.
The Matanuska Susitna Borough and Governor Bill Walker issued a disaster declaration yesterday due to erosion and threat of flooding in the Butte area along the Matanuska River. Matsu Borough spokesperson Patty Sullivan says this isn't a case of high water, but of the direction of the river.
That's the concern, is that the aim of the full brunt of the river is straight toward a riverbank. You know, in the past, it was parallel, and you know, you normally think of rain and high water levels. That's not this story. This story is the river pointing at, you know, soft materials that it potentially could bust through and flood parts of Butte.
If the river breaks through the embankment, Sullivan says water could extend beyond the banks into low-lying areas, potentially affecting as many as 75 homes. Governor Walker's declaration mobilizes state resources to help protect critical infrastructure, including power lines and a gas line. Sullivan says, for now, response crews from the Borough and State Department of Transportation will bring in Armor Rock to help contain the river.
It's giant, you know, several hundred pound boulders that could potentially withstand, the bashing of water.
The borough is also in contact with federal resources, including the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and Homeland Security. Sullivan says homes between miles 12 and 15 of the Old Glenn Highway are most at risk. Though no evacuation order is in effect right now, Sullivan urges residents to develop an evacuation plan in case the river breaches the embankment.
What would we do if we had to leave? What would we take with us? Where are our pets going? We've provided lists on our website, and firefighters in Butte have been knocking on doors, handing out some as well. And we really want people to take it seriously.
If an evacuation is necessary, Sullivan says a shelter will be established at the Seventh-day Adventist campground off Maud Road. More than 70 people crowded into the Juneau Assembly Chambers yesterday in support of an equal rights ordinance. With an 8-to-1 vote, the Juneau Assembly adopted the ordinance. The ordinance takes effect in 30 days and protects against discrimination based on gender identity, gender expression, and sexual orientation. Frieda Westman spoke in support of the ordinance on behalf of the Alaska Native Sisterhood.
It takes all of us working together to support each other in doing what is right, to have equal protection. If not all of us are protected, then none of us are protected. And it's important that this be passed.
The Reverend Phil Campbell from the Northern Light United Church also expressed his support.
It was Theodore Parker and later Martin Luther King Jr. who said that the arc of the moral universe is long, but that it bends toward justice. I humbly submit, Assembly members, that by the passage of the Equal Rights Ordinance this night, you will facilitate yet more bending toward justice and equality for all people.
Community members wearing large buttons with the word yes over the pride flag filled the room, but the ordinance wasn't without its critics. Assemblyman Jerry Nankervis voted against the 15-page ordinance. He said he didn't disagree with the intent, but said there are problems with its execution. He said some aspects dealing with accessibility could increase a landlord's costs. Some facilities may be forced to rent to, he suggested, satanic groups. He also said offhand remarks could make people liable for aiding or abetting discrimination.
My concern with supporting this and the way it's written and as lengthy as it is would be that I would fall into the sand trap that I often talk about, which is the ends justifying the means. And I just can't do it the way it's structured right now. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Tom Williams was one of two community members who spoke in opposition to the ordinance.
The premise of this ordinance is that only those in the protected classes need to be insulated from unlawful behavior when, in fact, abuses can occur on both sides of any transaction.
The ordinance doesn't create a city agency or group that will monitor discrimination. Instead, it allows community members to take legal action if they feel they've experienced discrimination. Anchorage is the only other Alaska city that has these protections for private citizens. Tonight, Kenai Peninsula Assembly Vice President Brent Johnson plans to introduce an ordinance that would replace the invocation, or prayer, said at the beginning of meetings, with a moment of silence. Earlier this month, an invocation by a member of the Satanic Temple was offered before the Assembly. As KBBI's Daisha Eaton reports, the prayer sparked a protest and a counter-protest.
Rumors had been circulating online that there would be an exorcism performed on the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly Building. But that did not happen, at least not right away. Instead, in the steady rain in front of the Soldotna Planned Parenthood, two groups gathered. On one side, Catholic protesters carrying rosaries and a life-size wooden cross said a prayer.
Father Almighty, Creator of heaven and earth, and in Jesus Christ, His only Son, our Lord.
On the other side, a group of women held signs reading, "My body, my choice," and "Reproductive health is not a sin." And they chanted this,
"Keep your rosaries off my ovaries."
But the protest was sparked by something that happened down the street inside Borough Assembly Chambers a couple of weeks back. That's when 27-year-old Kenai Peninsula College student Iris Fontana invoked the power of Satan.
"Let us stand now, unbowed and unfettered by arcane doctrines born of fearful minds in darkened times."
It ended like this.
"It is done. Hail Satan."
Several months ago, Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly President Blaine Gilman introduced an ordinance that would have done away with the invocation, but he withdrew it under pressure from local Christian leaders who wanted the prayer to continue. Fast forward to August 17th, when the religious protesters combined issues they see as community problems. Outside Planned Parenthood, Kenai resident and spokesperson for the Catholic group, Toby Burke, says he's there to address what he calls two evils going on in the community.
"First and foremost, you know, the evil of abortion, the destruction of innocent life, for one, and we're out here in front of Planned Parenthood because they make all the local or most of the local referrals to the local abortionist. And two, you may have heard about the invocation at the borough building last week. And so this is kind of like we're going to start praying here. We'll eventually process over to the borough building."
Praying is the Catholic group's way of fighting back, he says. On the other side of the Planned Parenthood issue were counter-protesters, including Michelle Vasquez. She says she supports the clinic, which provides many important services besides abortion.
"It's actually the health care provider for millions of low-income women across the country. They provide pap smears, they provide cancer screenings, breast exams, prostate exams for men. It's just so crucial that we have that. Only 3% of their services are abortion. So I just find it reprehensible that these people would want to see such a great organization just disappear."
This summer, the Assembly heard repeated public testimony from residents who said that prayer at a public meeting was inappropriate, and also that the invocation, as practiced, seemed exclusionary to non-Judeo-Christian faiths. Local religious leaders testified in support of keeping the invocation. Now a moment of silence is under consideration as an alternative. The Catholic protesters walk toward the borough building, and right before they get to it, the counter-protesters link arms to form a symbolic human wall.
"We are the wall, the separation of church and state. We are the wall."
Eventually, everyone arrives in front of the borough building.
"Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners."
Iris Fontana is also at the protest, the woman who said the prayer that sparked so much controversy. Fontana says she supports Planned Parenthood and free speech.
The invocation that I used was written by the spokesman for the Satanic Temple, and so I could have left Hail Satan off, but why? There shouldn't be a reason to have to rein myself in. It's free speech. Everyone has free speech. You know, I shouldn't have to hide.
Standing with Fontana is a retired school teacher and self-described Christian.
I am Judith Jenkinson, the grandmother of this nasty rebel I love so much. And I'm here because I support her. She's right.
Jenkinson says she's proud that her granddaughter is fighting for separation of church and state in the local government.
It's 2016. People ought to have rights. This whole protest is so dark ages, it just scares me to death.
Fontana says she's pleased that the assembly is now considering doing away with the invocation and instituting in its place a moment of silence.
That would be perfect. I think that's reasonable.
The Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly is scheduled to introduce the new ordinance at their Tuesday, August 23rd meeting. In Soldotna, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the Coast Guard prepares for an increase in Arctic travel.
The assets available to conduct a search and rescue operation of that magnitude has not been in place because it just never happened and there was never a need.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbaalaska.com.
The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
The U.S. Northern Command and Coast Guard have launched a major field training exercise off Alaska's northwest coast. Arctic Chinook is intended to demonstrate how local, state, and federal agencies would respond to a simulated cruise ship accident. The big luxury cruise ship Serenity will sail through the area while the exercise is underway. And to further complicate things, bad weather has just set in. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Coast Guard Commander Mark Wilcox says Arctic Chinook planners have had to incorporate some extra precautions into the exercise due to rough weather that set in over the weekend over the Bering and Chukchi seas.
We are having to adapt our exercise just slightly to accommodate what is going to be gale force winds.
The National Weather Service issued a gale warning effective through this evening for waters off the Seward Peninsula, where the exercise will be held. It's also where the luxury liner Crystal Serenity and its 1,600 passengers and crew will soon be traveling through en route to the Northwest Passage and on around to New York. The Weather Service predicts the storm will whip up 35 to 45 knot winds off Alaska's coasts, and it's issued a winter storm warning and forecast up to 8 inches of snow on the western end of the North Slope. Wilcox says the Coast Guard and U.S. Northern Command, or NORTHCOM, scheduled Arctic Chinook for now because it's usually the best time to conduct such an exercise.
We place a lot of these sort of key events, we time them for August because we expect to get the best weather and the least sea ice, but Mother Nature doesn't always let us move forward as planned.
Wilcox says the exercise is intended to test the ability of local, state, and federal emergency responders to rescue 200 passengers from a cruise ship that's run into trouble in those waters. The scenario calls for bringing passengers to shore around Tin City near the westernmost tip of the Seward Peninsula, where rescuers would face their next logistical challenge.
So how do we keep people alive on the beach while the secondary round of rescue assets that will bring them to an Arctic hub or village, how do we keep them alive in that time span?
Responders on the beach will triage the evacuees, sending uninjured passengers to Nome, then on to Anchorage. 50 people will play the role of injured passengers who will be taken initially to Kotzebue, says Army Colonel Michael Forsyth. He's Chief of Staff for Alaskan Command, the NORTHCOM subordinate agency headquartered at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson. That's helping the Coast Guard manage the training exercise.
There's about 50 folks that will actually get in lifeboats that are going to be involved with being casualties that the municipal community will have to react to.
Forsyth says Arctic Chinook will involve up to 1,000 people from several agencies, along with 3 ships, 12 aircraft, and many other types of equipment. He says agencies involved include U.S. Army Alaska, Air National Guard, Federal Homeland Security Department and its state counterpart, and the Arctic Domain Awareness Center, Homeland Security's University of Alaska-affiliated research arm.
Canada is also contributing to the exercise, a helo, a fixed-wing aircraft, and also dozens of personnel.
Forsyth says other Arctic nations also are sending observers, and he says management of the complex exercise will be done out of the Alaskan Command's facilities at Jay Bear, where many of the agencies already have offices.
With all these disparate entities, it takes a lot of cooperation. So that cooperation is critically important to understand and to get the roles and responsibilities right before you have the actual incident.
Forsyth says the training is needed because the Pentagon has concluded that shipping around Alaska will increase further in the years ahead as sea ice continues to recede and make the Arctic Ocean more accessible.
In the state of Alaska, we have never seen a cruise ship with 1,500 passengers circumnavigating the Arctic. So this is a first. So the requirement to have the personnel and the assets available to conduct a search and rescue operation of that magnitude has not been in place because it just never happened and there was never a need.
Arctic Chinook will wrap up Wednesday. The Crystal Serenity, anchored off Nome as of late Monday, is scheduled to arrive in New York on September 16th. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
NASA looks at what's up in the sky, but the organization also tracks changes happening on Earth. In the past few decades, Arctic sea ice has been rapidly disappearing, and this summer, the melt is approaching a record low. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins reports how a NASA satellite will help keep watch.
The future of monitoring Arctic ice begins in space. Thomas Wagner, a NASA scientist, says think of ISAT-2 like a giant laser pointer. But rather than entertaining your cat, these lasers can measure the height of ice above the water. A total of 6 of them will be beamed down to Earth.
The point being, we're going to get our most accurate maps ever of the thickness of the Arctic sea ice. And that's one of the most important things that we put into our models.
Models that Wagner says could influence conservation and planning decisions in the Arctic. NASA launched a prototype of ISAT in the early 2000s, but it was decommissioned in 2010. This new and improved satellite, along with additional measurements collected by NASA, will help determine what the future could look like in the Arctic, and it's happening at an important time.
A lot of ice experts, including myself, were thinking that we're headed for another record minimum.
That's Hayo Eiken, a professor at the International Arctic Research Center at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. He says Arctic sea ice is important because it acts like a giant air conditioner for our planet. This year, a combination of events, like a major ice retreat near Russia, left scientists wondering if the summer would beat a previous low. The last record minimum in the Arctic was in 2012, but wind patterns offset the loss of sea ice, and things cooled down a bit.
And so now it looks like we'll have a well below normal summer ice extent, but we just won't have that record minimum.
Still, Eiken says scientists are trying to figure out how the blob, a large pool of warm water in the Pacific Ocean, could be affecting the Arctic. Sunlight is the most effective way to melt ice.
However, the heat that comes up from below, some of it actually survives the winter. So in part, what we're seeing now is that we have years where some of the heat that's put into the ocean, upper ocean, from the sun and the atmosphere in the summer survives well into the winter.
That could mean melt episodes even in the colder months. Eiken says he's excited about the NASA satellite, which can help document these changes. And even though what it finds might appear alarming, Thomas Wagner, the NASA scientist, says people should be concerned, not afraid.
Look, I have kids too, and I'm not hopeless at all. You know, I'm all the time I see things that are going on in society that let me think we are generating the social will to deal with this. And I think we're getting a better handle on the challenges that we face today, and I think we're going to be able to deal with them.
ISAT-2 is set to launch in 2018. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
El Niño has transitioned to below normal sea surface temperatures in the mid-latitude Pacific. If that persists, the condition known as La Niña typically results in a colder than normal winter for Alaska. But National Weather Service Climate Science and Services Manager Rick Thoman says low sea ice and remaining warm water around Alaska will be primary drivers of the state's autumn weather.
The Gulf of Alaska, the Bering Sea, on up into the Chukchi Sea, much warmer than normal. That heat will take a while to dissipate. Sea surface temperatures don't typically reach their maximum until the end of August or even early September. So that's kind of locked in.
Tolman says warmer seas provide more potentially rain and snow yielding moisture to the air.
That's one part of the equation. The other part of the equation is we have to have the atmospheric conditions. We need storms to be able to turn that moisture into precipitation. Typically in the autumn, that's not so hard to do.
Tolman stresses ocean temperatures and moisture most directly impact coastal weather.
Once we move inland a little bit, then it becomes more complicated. For instance, across the interior, if our dominant flow during the fall is, say, out of the east or northeast from Canada, well, it won't matter very much that the oceans around us are warm because that's not where our air is coming from. So it can have a potential effect, but away from the coast, there's other factors involved.
Tolman cautions while the overall fall outlook for Alaska is for warmer than normal, there can still be below normal days, weeks, or even a month.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, fueling philanthropic programs dedicated to creating educational and professional opportunities for Alaska Native people.
Boating accidents happen even to experienced boaters and even on calm, sunny days. This boating season, make your friends and loved ones promise to always wear a life jacket and carry emergency communication and distress signaling devices. Visit pledgetolive.org where you can file a float plan, get marine weather forecasts, and download a pre-departure checklist. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
Anchorage police have released the name of the man found dead Monday morning on a city road. Police say 22-year-old Michael McQuan Mitchell was found dead at Mile 3 on Campbell Airstrip Road. Police are investigating the case as a homicide. They have not released how Mitchell died. No arrest has been made. Police say Mitchell's body was found just before 8:30 a.m. Monday morning. The road is the only route into Stuckagin Heights, a mountainside subdivision. The Juneau Empire reports Representative Kathy Munoz, a Republican from Juneau's Mendenhall Valley, has written judicial sentencing authorities seeking leniency for convicted offenders in a case of child sexual assault and a case of child endangerment related to sexual abuse of a child. KTOO's Jeremy Shea sat down with Paula Ann Solis, the Empire's Cops and Courts reporter, on Monday to talk about her story.
My name is Paula Ann Solis, and I am the Cops and Courts reporter for the Juneau Empire.
So let's start with the key people in the story. Who is Thomas Jack Jr.?
Thomas Jack Jr. was born in Juneau, from what I understand from court records. However, moved to Hoonah, where a lot of his family lives, and has lived there most of his life, and along with his wife a couple years back, took on two foster kids. He was convicted for sex abuse of a minor for his oldest foster child. According to court documents, he was sexually active with his eldest foster child, showing her affection that is not the type of affection a father should show, him revealing genitalia to her and doing other types of inappropriate activity with her.
And what were the actual charges that he was convicted of?
4 counts of sex abuse of a minor in the first degree and 2 counts of sex abuse of a minor in the second degree.
These are all felony counts?
Yes, all felonies.
And who is Mary Cheska Hoagie?
Mary Cheska Hoagie is a Juneau resident who started a relationship with a man when she met him, was a registered sex offender, and they had 2 children together here in Juneau. And she was recently sentenced to 30 months in prison for child endangerment, because she left those 2 children in the care of a sex offender who went on to create child pornography with them. And her inability to protect them from that situation is what led her to facing child endangerment charges.
And we all know Kathy Munoz is the Republican legislator that represents Juneau's Mendenhall Valley in the Alaska House of Representatives. And so how does Representative Munoz have anything to do with Thomas Jack Jr.'s sentencing and Mary Cheska Hoagie's sentencing?
During the sentencing process for each of these defendants' case, as is common with any sentencing, the attorneys will ask for letters promoting the goodwill of their defendants and their character. And Representative Munoz volunteered herself to be one of those character witnesses for both of these defendants.
And what was she asking for?
With Mary Cheska Hoagie, Kathy Munoz's letter, it was just a, I know this person. She regularly attends church. I'm very impressed with her dedication. Consider that in your sentencing. And then with her friend Thomas Jack Jr., she was asking that the judge consider the length that is currently being proposed for Thomas Jack Jr., which would be 50 years, 10 suspended, 40 years would actually be served, saying this is clearly too much coming out of this long reform on crime that the state has recently seen. We know that there are other ways to reform prisoners.
And what was Representative Kathy Munoz's explanation for this when you talked to her about it?
Her first explanation was that she was a private citizen when she wrote these letters, therefore kind of didn't need to explain herself. When pressed for more comment, she said she was a good friend of both of these. So she mentioned doing these things just as a friend, as a private citizen, as someone concerned for people she cares about.
So aside from this awkward association between a politician and convicted child abusers, there's sort of a good governance or separation of powers issue in play here too, right?
Right. Speaking to one representative, the concern is you can't separate your name from your title. And when you say this is something that I would like you to consider, it comes with a little bit more authority when there's a representative before your title.
Have you had a sense of the public reaction, if it's, you know, kind of a mixed bag or is it very one-sided?
It's a mixed bag. It seems more at this point to be shock. But again, this is all public information. People are surprised to see that a representative for the state is sending these types of letters out.
That was KTOO's Jeremy Shea talking with Juneau Empire reporter Paula Ann Solis. Links to the story are at our website, alaskapublic.org. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Josh Edge in Anchorage, Lakedra Chavis, Elizabeth Jenkins and Jeremy Shea in Juneau, Dacia Eaton in Soldotna, and Tim Ellis and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds on the web at arcticwirerope.com. The University of Alaska Southeast School of Management offers online college degrees for the unconventional student or working professional who wants learning on their schedule and timeline. Learn more at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by UAS. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2016 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or to learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG. If you're looking for business opportunities in the government marketplace, you'll want to know about the Alaska Procurement Technical Assistance Center. Alaska PTAC helps businesses navigate the challenging process of the federal, state, and local government procurement cycles with offices in Anchorage and Fairbanks and delivers services statewide. More information at ptacalaska.org. This message brought to you by Alaska PTAC.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.